Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and thought grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That's what it's all about, right? Getting up and thinking about your day instead of your diet. It is much better to think about your day instead of your diet. And I am here to help you do exactly that. So if you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's on your mind. So last week, a caller asked me to talk about the seven words you should never say to yourself or about yourself. I came up with this list after being inspired by the comedian George Carlin and his seven words you can't say on TV. Of course, that was then, this is now. All those words you can say on TV. But my seven words in alphabetical order are but, can't, dumb, and all the versions of dumb, like stupid, idiot, moron, but can't, dumb, normal, I call that the N-word, normal, ridiculous, should, don't should on yourself, and try. So I got through all of them last week except for try. So let me finish that list. Let's talk about try. Here's why you should never try to do anything. If you're trying to lose weight, trying to stay healthy, trying to date, trying to launch a business, trying to do anything, then you're stuck, right? Trying doesn't exist. Now, we're a few weeks into the new year when a lot of us say we're going to make changes, right? We're going to try to lose weight, try to go to the gym more often, try to eat healthier, drink less. In fact, most New Year's resolutions are some version of doing more or doing less of something you want to change. So maybe you start off strong and disciplined, but somewhere along the line, maybe this week, maybe next week, maybe June, maybe sometime, you know what? Your resolve will fizzle and then you're back where you started. I mean, who has not had that experience? So maybe, just maybe, it's because you are trying too hard. Now, if you ever saw the original Star Wars series, there is a famous scene in the Empire, I think it's The Empire Strikes Back. I'm fairly certain it's The Empire Strikes Back, where Luke Skywalker first meets Yoda. Luke's fighter plane is stuck in this mucky muck in this planet, and he has to move the plane, and he can't, but he tells Yoda he's going to give it a try. And Yoda says, I will spare you the Yoda impression because do it I cannot. See what I did there? Ah, so bad. This is why I'm sparing you the Yoda impression. He says, try not. Do or do not. There is no try. There is no try. Now, if you haven't seen that movie, you have got to see it. You will love it. I hope you'll love it. My 11-year-old told me that Star Wars is boring. She said the original Star Wars is boring. What's up with that? I'm just going to pretend I never heard that. One day she will see the light. Okay, but I digress. So look, guys, here's the thing. If I dropped a pen in front of you and said, hey, try to pick up that pen, you either pick it up or you don't. You can't try to pick up the pen, right? If you're watching me, like you either pick up the pen or you don't. You don't pick up the pen. There is no try. You either do it or you don't. You can't try to break up with someone. You can't try to meet someone new. You can't try to start dating or try to stop smoking or try to eat healthy. You either do it or you don't. And it's the same thing with changing your relationship to food. Whether you want to stop binging, make healthier choices, lose weight, whether you're getting stuck and it's because you are trying. And therefore, it is time to look at what's stopping you from meeting your goals. So it's usually one of two things. Either you're afraid of failure or you're afraid of success. So fear of failure usually has to do with our identity, has to do with our sense of self. Now, remember, there is a difference between failing and being a failure. One has to do with what you're doing and not doing, and the other has to do with you as a person. So failure, let me give you an example. So imagine two people, let's call them Vicky and Victor. Say they both apply for a job, and let's say neither one of them gets it. And Vicky says, oh, I'm so bummed I didn't get that job. I really wanted that job, but hopefully I'll get the next one. And she goes on with her life and she applies for more jobs. Victor also doesn't get the job and he says, oh, I knew it. I'm a total failure. I didn't get the job. I'm a loser. I suck at life. I'm never going to get a good job. Now he's upset. He's calling himself a loser. He's calling himself a failure, which is just going to make him feel worse about himself. And what do you think might happen next? Maybe Victor will turn to food for comfort because he feels such shame about himself. He has no vocabulary to make himself feel better. He's going to go to comfort food instead of giving himself comfort words. So fear of failure, when you try, you're stuck in try and you're not doing or not doing something that you want to do. Remember that failure is connected to shame. Shame is that there's something wrong with you. But if you remember, it's not that you've failed to achieve a goal. It's that you've failed to achieve a goal. You're not a failure as a person. And often we get that confused. Like I just got it confused as I was talking to you. So many of us feel like a failure instead of we are fine and we've just failed at something. And often that fear of feeling so bad and at failing just keeps you stuck. So if you don't pursue what you want, there's no fear of failing. And that's why sometimes we think about doing it. I'm going to try to do that. I'm going to do that. One day I'll do that. When this happens, then I'll do that. And then we do nothing. But if you do nothing, nothing will change. So again, if fear of failure is keeping you stuck, it is important to challenge the idea that you are a failure if you fail. Same thing with feelings. Being angry doesn't make you an angry person. It makes you a person who's angry. Same principle. So if you fail, that's about your behavior. It's about your actions. It's not about you. Now, the other reason that people don't try, or they get stuck in trying rather than doing, is fear of happiness. And when I talk about this fear of happiness, people are like, what? What are you talking about? Who doesn't want to be happy? Of course I want to be happy. But if we dig a little deeper, which is what we do, they often realize they're afraid of what happiness might bring. And sometimes it feels safer to yearn for happiness instead of actually having it. Because if you have it, what could happen? That rug might be pulled out from under you. If you get happy, you can lose your happiness. If you're yearning for happiness, if it's just like, well, one day when I reach that magical weight or when I stop this behavior, then I'll be happy. You don't risk what is going to happen when that happens. And a lot of times people have very negative associations to happiness, even though they don't realize it. It's like, well, artists must suffer or good people must suffer. Like it somehow makes you a better person to suffer and struggle. You know, and so this notion that you're a good person if you suffer and struggle means also that you're a bad person on some level if you allow yourself to feel good. People talk about feeling too good. Oh, I don't want to feel too good. Then I'll have a big head. My friends won't like me. Things will go badly for me. Once things go well, inevitably something bad happens. So the key is, I won't let myself feel too good, and therefore nothing bad can happen to me. Now, these are all unconscious thoughts. You're not literally consciously thinking that. But when you dig into the hidden parts of your mind, then you might discover that you do have that association. Another reason, and this is a little deep, this is kind of psychoanalytical, but people fear success and happiness because of the physiological experience of feeling good in your body. That feeling of good can also be really close to anxiety. I know that might sound a little bit weird, but sounds weird. I'll hold it. Leave it at that and answer this call. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hey, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago. How are you?
Hey, Brian from Chicago. So are you just freezing? I heard it was minus 45 or something there. Are you doing?
And that's not even with, that's with wind chill. It's like, you know, the high was 3. It's awful.
3 degrees. I won't even tell you, Brian, that I get cold when it's 70 degrees. I know, it's just so wrong. My 3 degrees.
Yeah, it's probably better not to tell me that.
No. I didn't say that. You didn't hear that. So, what's going on, Brian?
My question for you today is essentially, you know, like when you're talking about working out or, you know, competition sports, you always talk about getting momentum and then keeping momentum. And so in the world that you talk about and that I'm, you know, very interested in your opinions on, my question for you is, once you kind of get where you're going, where you either are able to, as you put it, make peace with food, or you kind of reached a certain equilibrium point with how you see yourself body-wise or eating habits-wise, what happens when you backslide? You know, how do you prevent that? What, you know, what are your thoughts about that?
So when you're talking about backslide, you might be also talking about sabotage. So a lot of people, they'll get to their goals or they'll get close to their goals, and then suddenly they just can't keep the momentum, like you were just saying, and they just go back to their old ways. I think that's what you're asking about. Like, how, if you can't keep the momentum going, well, maybe you're doing something that's impossible to sustain. Like, you know, I've had people who will go to the gym every day of the week for 2 hours, and then they're like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't keep this up. And I say, that's because nobody can keep this up unless you're a professional sports figure. Like, who's going to be in the gym training that hard 2 hours a day, 7 days a week? You have a life to live. So it might be that people set themselves up to do things that they simply cannot do. Another reason has to do with psychology. And so sometimes people, and this goes to what I was just talking about, sort of the flip side of these fears I was just referencing, which is that sometimes there are associations to success that are scary. I was just talking about how fear of happiness can make people not allow themselves to get happy or get too happy. So, and that's often because they either have expectations, then they're afraid they're going to be disappointed. Like, people often think, well, if I change my body, I will change my life. But what if that doesn't happen? Because usually it doesn't happen. You know, what if everything in your life stays the same? So that maybe that level of disappointment is too much to risk. So you're going to stay in this place of trying to get to a place where you're going to be happy or feel good, but never actually getting there. Because if you get there and it's not what you think it's going to be, then you've lost the illusion that you can create that great life by just changing your body. Does that make sense?
That does. So I guess then the follow-up question is, so what then? What if that is exactly where you arrive at? I presume it's just simply the fact that this is not a goal that's meant to be reached and then the journey is over. This is sort of a lifetime journey. It's a lifetime effort.
Well, hopefully it's a lifetime journey to understand yourself, but not a lifetime effort. Just quickly, I'll answer your question, but I just want to quickly, you raise a good point that I want to say that almost everyone who comes to see me will at some point say, well, I know I'm going to have to struggle with this the rest of my life. And I say, no, no, no. In fact, I feel so strongly about this. I need to do this. Yes, yes. No, no, you don't need to struggle with this the rest of your life. Once you deal with what's eating at you, then you can just go live your life. So it's a lifetime journey to understand yourself and come to know yourself better. And, you know, a journey into your mind and your soul is always a good thing. And hopefully that will last forever and you'll grow as a person and it's all good. But the struggle should not be a lifetime thing. But to answer your question of, well, what then? Instead of thinking about, well, when you get to this place, when the number on the scale says this, or you stop binging, or whatever is going on with your behavior it changes, then you'll be happy. You've got to find out why you think you need to change to be happy. Really, what is it that needs to change in your life to bring you a sense of solace? Because it's not the number on the scale. Wherever you go, there you are. Got to find a different way to relate and respond to yourself in the world as it is. And that is separate from whatever your body is.
Thank you.
Brian?
Yeah.
No, I can't really hear you.
Hello?
That winter storm in Chicago must be interfering.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Yeah. You're coming in just fine.
Okay, and now you are too.
Okay. No, I said thank you. That makes total sense, and I really appreciate the insight.
Well, thank you so much for calling and asking a question that I'm sure that a lot of people can relate to, and I hope you stay warm in this unbelievably horrible weather.
I will do my best. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
45 degrees below zero with a wind chill factor. I can't even imagine that. If you guys are dealing with that, if you're listening to me right now and you're dealing with that, I am so sorry. Stay warm. Light a fire. Drink hot tea. All right, so I was talking about how the experience of the physiological experience of something good can also be related to something bad. So here's an example, because that sounds a little heady. So I have a friend who's an actor. She takes a lot of acting classes, and she's a wonderful actor, but she gets really, 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 really nervous in auditions. So her acting coach told her, hey, keep in mind the physiological experience of nervousness and anxiety is nearly identical to the physiological experience of excitement, right? Same thing, your heart's beating fast, you have that adrenaline, like you feel that way whether you're excited or you feel that way whether you're nervous. So he told her to remind herself that when she felt nervous, that she was actually excited about the opportunity to have the audition. Reframe that nervousness as excitement. It didn't work. And here's why. You can't talk yourself out of what you're feeling. You got to work through why you're feeling that way. So my friend had to work through why she was nervous at auditions. And that's a whole other story. But the principle she was taught is sort of the same in reverse. So excitement is therefore psychologically nearly the same as anxiety. And sometimes when people feel good, it brings up the anxiety. And so you've got to work through the original anxiety, especially if you have a history of trauma, to work through the original anxiety so the excitement of success doesn't trigger you into feeling anxious. So, you know, another reason that New Year's resolutions fail is they're often about behavior. They're about dieting or smoking or working out or, you know, seeing friends more, seeing friends less. You know, they're all having to do with what you're doing or not doing. But what if your resolutions didn't have to do with behavior, but instead had to do with your relationship to yourself? You know, maybe you want to resolve, it's January, Have a January resolution. Be kinder to yourself. Listen to what you need, want, and feel. Comfort yourself with words instead of with food. And therefore, you're not going to be in a place of trying. You're going to be in a place of responding. And remember that changing behavior is not about willpower. It's just not. If you don't address the underlying reasons for why you're binging or overeating or doing whatever it is you're doing with food that you don't want to do, it's almost impossible to stop. I mean, you could do it with willpower, but then you're constantly in a state of white-knuckling it. But when you identify and process the underlying emotions and conflicts that lead to whatever's going on with food, everything changes. So instead of saying, I'm going to try to lose weight, say, I'm going to think about how losing weight will affect me and see where that takes you. And when you talk to yourself in a new way, you feel like a new person. When you're nicer to yourself, you feel nice. When you feel good, you're less likely to turn to food for distraction or to numb yourself or comfort or anything else. So one of the things that people have a hard time holding, and I've been sort of thinking about this in the last couple of weeks, a lot of people have been coming in feeling feeling disappointed for one reason or another. Disappointment is a really difficult state to hold. And here's a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. that's really quite profound. I want to share it with you. He says, "We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope." Isn't that awesome? We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope. Now, that is easier said than done, because when you're feeling disappointed, it doesn't feel finite. You're just feeling it in the moment, and it feels horrible. Now, here are some of the things I've heard over the past couple of weeks from people who were disappointed either in situations or in people. They said, oh, this is not what I signed up for. This is not what I was looking for. Or, I thought things would be different. I really did. And the way they are, it's just not what I thought it was going to be. Or, I feel so stupid for thinking this was going to work out. Nothing works out for me. I feel so stupid. Or, I can't believe I trusted that person. I'm so disappointed in myself for trusting that person. Whereas, you know, instead of being disappointed in the other person who abused the trust. So, as an example, here's an example of someone who was dealing with disappointment this way. Now, I'll call her Paulette, one of my patients. We'll call her Paulette. So she went into escrow on her dream house, and then the deal fell apart. And she said, oh, I feel so stupid for thinking things would go my way. I can't believe I let myself get so excited about that house. I should have known better. And a moment later, she added, like kind of humorously, but kind of not. She said, I bet stuff like this doesn't happen to skinny people. Ha! So Paulette was disappointed about losing her dream house, but instead of processing that disappointment, she turned against herself. She accused herself basically of not being psychic. I should have known better. That's like, I should be psychic. I should have a crystal ball and know all things, and that way I can avoid it. So instead of dealing with the disappointment, which is that, yes, the world can be disappointing, she turned on herself. She accused herself of not being psychic. She told her she felt stupid, and she joked that thinner people don't have to deal with things not working out. In other words, if she changed her weight and became one of those skinny people, she'd never be disappointed again. So this is an illusion, because, and this goes along with what I was talking to Brian from Chicago with, you cannot manage your life situations by controlling your weight. So let's look at disappointment. Let's figure out how to deal with it so you don't need to eat over it. The definition of disappointment is the feeling of sadness or displeasure caused by the non-fulfillment of one's hopes or expectations. Disappointment can be about a person or a situation, and it's often more acute than sadness or displeasure, because there are so many elements bound up in the experience of disappointing, being disappointed, including the idea of losing basic trust in other people and in the world. Because if other people or situations are unpredictable, or unreliable, you may be vulnerable to turning to food because food is predictable. Food is reliable. And when things don't work out and someone lets you down, you can also feel a sense of real powerlessness or helplessness. And focusing on your powerlessness over food, which ostensibly you can control, may be preferable to experiencing powerless in the context of your relationships or in the world. It's easier to feel helpless and powerless and disappointed about what you ate than about someone or something. So if you're disappointed in yourself for something that is food, weight, or body image related, you may be displacing feelings of disappointment towards others and turning them on yourself, as Paulette did. So ask yourself, here's how to deal with it. Ask yourself, what situations or people and or people are disappointing you? What's going on in your life that's causing this temporary disappointment? I mean, maybe a friend has let you down. Maybe things have not gone as planned. Something is just not going right. You're disappointed. Ask yourself, what does it mean about you? Now, maybe you think, oh, this means I'm not good enough. I somehow should have known better. Bad things happen to me. You know, if those kinds of thoughts are where your mind goes, explore that as a notion, as an idea. Like, where did you get the idea that you don't deserve good things to happen to you? Or where do you get the idea that you just can't create something good in your life? Look at the basis of that as almost like an identity or a self-esteem. Ask yourself, what does it mean about other people, this disappointing situation? Maybe it means you just can't trust other people. They're inherently self-serving. They'll throw you under that proverbial bus. You can't trust other people. And if that's the case, consider where you learned that people are inherently untrustworthy. Now, the reality is there are people who are untrustworthy. There are people who will disappoint you because they are self-serving. Some people disappoint you without meaning to. But if your idea is, hey, the world is full of people who you can't trust, they're out for themselves, then you're not gonna get fulfilled in your relationships with people because they're somewhat dangerous. And that's where you could turn to food for fulfillment instead. Also, ask yourself, what does this disappointment mean about the world? Maybe it means the world is an unsafe, unfair place, and there are no rules. Bad things happen to good people. And if that's the case, explore your life experiences. Identify where you came to have this idea. Because when we have these things that happen to us early in our lives, subsequently, when other disappointing things happen, it just reinforces our original notion. But we don't look at everything that doesn't fit. So if you have someone who disappoints you early on, it doesn't matter how many other people who are there for you, who are reliable, who are dependable. It doesn't matter how many of them exist. You're looking for the one who's undependable and disappointing, and then we create patterns. See, see, this person was disappointing, and this person is disappointing. That's how people are. And then we disregard and filter out everything that doesn't fit this notion. And why do we do this? So we feel prepared. You know, it's humiliating to feel disappointed in people or to feel bad about yourself because something happened to you or someone treated you badly. It's humiliating. No one wants to feel humiliated. So we say, oh, I know. This is our unconscious speaking. I know. I'm gonna make sure this never happens to me again. I'm gonna see it coming. The problem is you will find it. You find the evidence you look for. You will see it coming. And that will just reinforce your negative ideas about the world, and nothing will change. But when you acknowledge your disappointment and you process the underlying anxieties about maybe your good enoughness, your powerlessness, your trust, fairness, hopelessness, when you deal with that, then you can move forward. Paulette, by the way, is now the proud owner of another house she liked just as much as the first one. Again, if you deal with the underlying emotions and conflicts that, that impact your sense of well-being, you make peace with yourself. And when you make peace with yourself, you also make peace with food. So here's a question from Christine in Long Island. She says, everywhere I go, I'm always looking at other people and wondering if I'm bigger than they are. I'm constantly comparing myself and trying to figure out who's thinner. It's making me crazy, and it's making my husband crazy too, because I'm always pointing out other people and asking him what he thinks. How do I stop? Help, Dr. Nina. Well, as Theodore Roosevelt said, comparison is the thief of joy. By the way, a few weeks ago I was at Starbucks, and there were a bunch of teenage girls, like, I don't know, like ninth grade, 14, 15, they look like. They're at the table next to me, and they're talking really loudly because they're teenage girls. And I could not help but overhear everything that they said. I wasn't trying to listen, but they were just like right there, and their voices were right here. So I overheard everything they said. So one girl was saying that some other girl named Kylie, who wasn't there, had lost weight over winter break. And the first girl was like, oh, is she skinnier than I am? And this began a whole debate about who was skinnier than whom. And they compared the size of their jeans. They compared the space between their thighs, that horrible, infamous thigh gap. They complained about not being able to see their hip bones. I was cringing as I was listening to this, just cringing. And then one of them said, well, Kylie may be skinny, but she still needs a nose job. Oh my God. So it occurred to me that actually the smallest part of these girls was their self-confidence. And that seemed to be solely based on their weight and appearance as compared to other girls. So to stop comparing yourself to others, Christine, it's important to challenge the ideas about yourself that negatively impact your self-esteem and make you look at your weight as the thing that makes you good or not good. As when you feel good about yourself as a whole, you're not going to worry how you measure up literally and figuratively compared to other people. So ask yourself, hey, where did you get the idea? You're not good enough as you are. Right now, whatever the number is on the scale, why is that the sole determinant of who you are and whether you're good enough? And who says that one number is better than another? Like, where does that even come from? Challenge that. And what do you imagine would happen if you were at a different size? Again, so often people think, well, when I am a different size and I'm skinnier, when I'm as skinny as she is, my life will be different. I'll be better in some indefinable way. I'll be more confident. I'll have more friends. I'll have the life that I want. Of course, no, because the only thing that's going to change is the number on the scale. Okay, so how do you stop this comparison? Well, here are some tips on how to stop comparing your body to other people. It's written by a dietitian named Kate Ekman. It's an article on Mind Body Green called How to Finally Stop Comparing Yourself to Others. And she says, well, I don't know about you, but when I compare myself to others, I always feel drained, insecure, and unhappy. And I find myself creating stories about how I'm not good enough. These feelings build stress in my body and leave me unable to operate from a creative, empowered place. She says, when you've compared yourself to somebody else, you aren't focusing on yourself and everything you have to offer the world in your own unique way. So it's time to make the sometimes difficult but very necessary commitment to stop comparing yourself to others. The world needs your special gifts. And here are five steps to get you started. First of all, recognize you're comparing yourself to others. Now, this may seem obvious, but sometimes, you know, it's so automatic, we don't even realize we're doing it. So she says, the first step in letting go of comparison is to acknowledge that you're doing it. It won't feel natural to focus only on yourself at first, as we're conditioned to compare ourselves and have others compare themselves to us. But by being aware of what you're doing, you can quickly dissolve any negative thoughts or feelings that may arise in that comparison. So nip it in the bud, just go back to embracing all you can offer the world instead. So Christine, and all of you who can relate to Christine, when you start having that little voice in your head going, is she, am I? And then some comparison follows, just like, just see a big stop sign come up in your mind. Stop. Just stop. And say to yourself, I'm going to focus on me. Who I am is who I am. Doesn't matter who I am compared to that person. I am unique. The second thing she says is focus on all that you are rather than what you think you are lacking. Focus on how you can serve yourself, others, and the world. Celebrate others rather than feeling jealous and attacking them. Or I would say, celebrate yourself rather than attacking yourself. When you attack others, doesn't feel good. When you attack yourself, it doesn't feel good. We are each unique and great in our own special way, and we have to celebrate that uniqueness and greatness in others and in ourselves. And she says when she catches herself comparing, she quickly says to herself, comparison is the thief of joy. Thank you, Theodore Roosevelt. And she never wants to feel joyless. You don't want to steal your joy away from yourself. So she immediately shifts her thoughts and it works. So try it. Remember, practice makes progress. She says, also keep everything in perspective. She says some people envy that she lives in New York and works full-time as a model. I thought she was a dietitian. Maybe she's a model dietitian. She says that she bets people don't envy the rejection she endures on a regular basis. She says she could envy friends and relatives for having wonderful spouses and adorable children. But she doesn't envy the lack of sleep or immense sacrifices all parents must make. So the point is we each have our own path, our own journey, our own unique personalities, our own gifts to share with the world. If you're too busy comparing yourself to other people, you might miss all the blessings put before you on your path. She also says, limit your time on social media. Limit is different than eliminate. So she says, have you ever had a perfectly great day only to scroll through your social media feeds and almost instantaneously feel horrible about yourself? She says she has had that experience on numerous occasions, and I bet everybody has had that experience. She says she remembers sitting at a hair salon feeling relaxed and pampered, casually browsing her Instagram feed. Within seconds, she felt her energy plummet. She was comparing herself to other women who seemed to have it all on Instagram. Fancy careers, fabulous outfits, cool vacations. Those thoughts give rise to feelings that bring us down. We feel as if we could never measure up as women, mothers, men, fathers, friends, employees, business people, whatever it is that you're trying to do. The message you're sending yourself when you have those thoughts is that you are not good enough, that you need to have more somehow in some indefinable way in order to compete with other people on your social media feed. But you know what? She says, and I quote, that's a bunch of crap. That's what she says. That's a bunch of crap. Someone is always going to be more physically attractive, smarter, wealthier, funnier, younger, older. It doesn't matter. What's important, again, she stresses, what's important are the unique gifts you and only you bring to the table and your special connections to other people. Even the people you deem the most successful with enviable careers, relationships, wardrobes, and homes have bad days, have trauma, have sadness in their lives. And that is so true. You know, being a certain weight does not immunize you from bad things happening in your life. Bad things happen to everyone, and it doesn't matter what you look like or how much you weigh. Last, she says, forgive yourself for all this comparison. She says, it's human nature to compare ourselves to other people. Forgive yourself for this nasty habit we've all succumbed to, but stay committed to the intention that you will no longer do it. So those are all some good tips on how to not compare your body and life to other people. So let me know what you think. Give me a call. me a call, let me know what is weighing on you, what is eating at you. Because when we get to those underlying core emotions and conflicts, which you may or may not be aware of, and when you learn to cope and respond to yourself in new ways, everything with food changes. And it changes forever. It changes for good. Because once you learn a new way of responding to yourself, you're not going to have to use willpower to not eat something for comfort. Because you're going to know how to comfort yourself. You're going to know how to soothe yourself. You're going to be in a totally different relationship to yourself. And you're going to feel good. And you're going to feel good about yourself. And when that happens, food is something you have for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and some snacks. So let's get to those underlying things that are eating at you. I have about, it's gone fast today. We have about 9 more minutes. So if you want to get a quick call in, give me a call, 818-602-4929. Okay, so I have some other tips on how to stop comparing yourself to others, because I figured the more tips, the better. These are from Dr. Susan Bialy, and she wrote an article for Psychology Today called How to Stop Comparing Yourself to Others. So she asks us, who do you most frequently compare yourself to? If you're not sure, try this question. Who have you compared yourself to in the last 24 hours? If you're still not sure, think of the last time you checked your Facebook or Instagram feed. Which updates made you feel envious or made you feel like your life paled in comparison? And also, did any posts make you feel smug, make you feel a little bit better than that person? The comparison game, the comparison war, as she puts it, is as old as humanity. So Dr. Bialy recommends avoiding mindlessly scrolling through social media feeds as much as possible. And by the way, if you have any social media feeds that make you feel bad, why don't you unfriend them or you know, stop following them? Because you shouldn't be having people's feeds come into your phone or your computer or your whatever device you have and making you feel bad. You actually have control over that. If someone is making you feel bad instead of inspiring you, do not follow that person. Do not watch that person. If it's a friend of yours, I know it's a little bit different. But studies show that time on social media increases depression and envy and decreases well-being. So use social media purposefully, specifically choosing what you're going to look at to keep those negative experiences at a minimum. She says she almost always regrets it when she lets down her guard and starts scrolling on Instagram. She'll inevitably see something that makes her feel bad about herself or her life, or something that makes her feel envious, like she's missing something that others have. And also, this is something she probably wasn't even thinking of. She didn't even know she was missing it until she saw it on someone else's feed. Who can relate? So back to Theodore Roosevelt's quote about comparison being the thief of joy. In addition to cultivating awareness with respect to inadvertently provoking comparison and then stealing joy, become a student. She says, become a student of how you squander your own contentness by getting sucked into the comparison trap. Here are some tips she has. Become aware of and avoid your triggers. Start noticing the situation that cause you to play the comparison game. Social media is a big one for most of us. But what about other circumstances? Is there a certain person who's constantly bragging about this or that or asks you questions about your life that are designed to make you feel inferior? Are there certain activities, such as strolling through a high-end shopping mall full of things you can't afford, or driving through an expensive neighborhood with houses you can't afford, that make you feel discontented with your life? And maybe you were feeling just fine about your life before you did those things. Make a list of who and what you frequently envy or compare yourself to, and write how each of those negatively affects you and why it's actually a waste of your time. And resolve to catch yourself the next time you compare and avoid these triggers whenever possible. In fact, avoid anything that doesn't add meaning or value to your life, because what's the point? She says, remind yourself, oh, this is so important, remind yourself that other people's outsides can't be compared to your insides. It's like, you know, don't compare other people's highlight reels to your real, R-E-A-L, life. And this is a really helpful habit to cultivate, because unless you're really close to someone, you can't use the outward appearance, you can't use what they show in their lives to judge the reality of their lives, because people curate the versions of themselves they want to show. They either post it on social media or they tell you in conversation just the stuff they want to tell you. They don't tell you the whole stories. I'm sure most of us have had the experience of having that, you know, that perfect couple, friends who were the perfect couple, the absolute perfect couple. They had the perfect life, the perfect jobs, the perfect 2.5 kids, the perfect dog. Everything looks picture perfect on the outside. And then one day, they announce they're getting a divorce, and you find out, guess what? Appearances can be deceiving. They were not so happy in their lives. So remember, you can't actually tell what people's lives are like by looking at their highlight reels, looking at what they have curated and what they show you. She says, are we doing on time? Okay. She says, repeat whenever necessary. Quote, money doesn't buy happiness and never will. It's a well-established truth that wealth, beyond having the basics in life, isn't associated with increased happiness or well-being. She says she used to perform flamenco dance. She is a psychologist and a flamenco dancer, by the way. The other writer was a model and a dietitian. These are some interesting hyphenate careers they have. She used to perform flamenco dances at an exclusive resort frequented by celebrities and the mega wealthy. And a manager there once told her that she'd never seen so many unhappy people in her life. Money and things provide temporary boosts of joy. Sure, why not? But their inevitable inability to provide lasting sustenance is usually more disappointing than anything else. And I would add that being a size 2 or 4 or 6 or 0 or whatever your ideal weight is does not bring happiness. All that happens is maybe you're happy for a little bit and you're happy, hey, I could go into the store and I could buy whatever I want, I can wear whatever I want, that feels good, but that doesn't make you feel good about yourself, because yourself is not your body. So changing your body doesn't change how you feel about yourself and how you feel in your life. She also says, be grateful for the good in your life. Resist any lies in your head that shout, it's not enough, or you're not enough. If you commit yourself to being deeply grateful for what is good in your life, if you remind yourself of that daily, you'll be far less vulnerable to comparison and envy. By the way, I should add, don't try to tell yourself you shouldn't feel envy. Just recognize that you feel it. You can't positive think away certain feelings. Recognize you feel it. Allow yourself to feel it. Jealousy, probably, rather than envy. Envy is destructive. Jealousy is common. I wish I had that is jealousy. And I wish I had that and I hate her for having it. That's envy. Allow yourself to feel it, but also don't put yourself in situations where you're going to feel that jealousy or envy and then feel badly about yourself. No. So it's not about talking yourself out of certain feelings. It's about avoiding feeling those feelings in the first place. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me on the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am so glad to spend this hour with you. And if you like the show, please take a moment to write a review on iTunes. You can find it under the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on iTunes Podcasts. Thank you in advance for writing a review. That means so much to me. And I will see you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.